at 806 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings on this Wednesday. Sean and Dalton. Got our buddy Jeff Poor going to join us here in a second. I do want to, not that it really matters if you're, you know, getting rained on right now, but our conversation with staff meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams pointing out the rain showers we're getting now, the thunderstorms. These are not because of Cristobal. This is upper air low causing this. And he said, I guess, although it's going to be raining pretty much the rest of the week off and on, he said maybe by Friday into Saturday, that rain will then be courtesy of Cristobal. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know it doesn't really, but if you're trying to score the raindrops at home, this is not Cristobal yet.
Not yet, but three named storms in the Atlantic already, and two before hurricane season began on Monday. And I want to remind
those don't
everyone,
even count preseason games.
Yeah, those were exhibitions. I want to remind everyone, if we get to the storm in this season, which it looks like we might, that's Nana. We could have a Hurricane Nana here in a few weeks. Some scary stuff.
A few weeks?
Tomorrow, maybe, the way this is going.
God bless. All right. Y'all say hello to Jeff Poor. You read his work in Lanyap, Yellowhammer News, Breitbart News, and, of course, the host of the Jeff Poor Show on WVNN in Huntsville, and a man who hosted Midday Mobile quite handily last week. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Sean. Thanks for having me on. I don't know.
I thought it was.
We got through it.
Listen, little victories, says Chris Knight, little victories. Lot to talk about, obviously. That's an understatement here. I don't know where we want to start, at the national level or at the state level or in the individual municipalities in the state where we have curfews in some places, not curfews in others. Let's talk about Birmingham a little bit here to get started. They're probably, if you're going to say had the most issues with rioting for the state, it would be Birmingham, wouldn't you say?
Say Birmingham, Hoover, that would be accurate. Sunday night was a rough night for the city of Birmingham. We know about the two reporters that got assaulted, but also downtown Birmingham, that area there where the Wells Fargo building is, and there was some glass being smashed, and we had some people trying to take down a statue. The mayor of Birmingham, Randall Woodfin, showed up there to kind of calm things. Now the statue's gone. This Confederate statue mm-hmm. has been the topic of controversy for the last while, I guess the last 4 or 5 years. So, Birmingham's probably where you see most of the unrest. I would say down your way in Mobile, there's been some graffiti and things of that nature, but Birmingham really kind of the hot spot.
Let's talk about the obelisk removed, because we reported yesterday about the two things, the statue of Robert E. Lee coming down in Montgomery, but that was not a, the mayor didn't decide that. That wasn't a municipal decision, it just happened overnight. But in the case of the obelisk there in Birmingham, it is Mayor Woodfin calling for it to be removed, and it then violates, I guess explain to people, we'll go backwards for a second here, that the way they've been dealing with that at Lynn Park, there's been plywood around the monuments there, right?
Right, they built it an enclosure of like plywood, and it just, you go there, and I've been there a few times since they've done, or when it was done like that, just looks like a big wooden box around the statue, and they had a cop standing there, kind of, you know, keeping onlookers away or whatever, but that's essentially what it was. There's this big wooden box in the middle of Lynn Park.
Okay, so that's what has been the story. Now it has been removed by the city, and a violation of the Monuments Act passed a couple years ago, right, by the legislature?
Yeah, so the Monument Preservation Act was passed by the legislature, signed into law by Governor Ivey. She even ran on it in some of her campaign ads in 2018. When the city of Birmingham did this, they started adding up $25,000 a day, and they were going to just, they took it all the way to the Alabama Supreme Court. Alabama Supreme Court said it was lawful, said it was constitutional, and therefore, you know, it's the law that they must adhere to the law.
Right.
Never really did. So what happened, I think, finally, they got to a place where the legislature, this last session, was going to deal with it, just get them to pay the $25,000 fine and let them take it down or whatever, and they ran out of time because of the coronavirus stuff and having to go get out early. But anyway, that was kind of where it stood heading into the weekend, and then Sunday nights when a merry group of protesters, as they say, wanted to go tear it down.
Okay, so Y'all see how this all ties together with the dealing with the legislature and what's happening now? So that $25,000, I've been focused on that. I looked at the opinion or, you know, the memo that came out from Steve Marshall, the AG. Is that it? Because it's saying that it's a $25,000 fine, and then I read in there some other language. I didn't know that. Does that mean that they would pursue something further, like having to put it back up and pay $25,000? Or is it basically you pay $25,000, state gets some cash, and they get that issue off their docket?
No, I think that's the plan. They're not. Marshall is having to go through the formalities right now, but Woodfin will figure out how to pay the $25,000 to Mayor Birmingham, and that will be it. That will be the end of it. This has been a something the state's had to deal with for the last several years, and I think it's just they don't. There's just not the political will to take it on. I would say I would be troubled by it because you have this sort of mob dictating the terms of how a law is interpreted, but no one really wants to be seen getting out in front of this right now, especially at this time.
Yeah, but the AG is saying he's going to prosecute it, right? I mean,
well, he's going to go through this formality, and the Steve Birmingham's going to pay $25,000 fine, or Woodfin is, and then they're going to walk away from it and be done with it. The way it was interpreted, for every day it's not up and it doesn't go back up, it $25,000 a day or whatever.
Okay,
and that adds up.
Okay,
you see?
It's not a one time deal.
Right, but they're going to, it looks to me like they're going to interpret it that way, and that's the way it's going to be enforced. It is going to be enforced, but it's not going to be enforced to the fullest extent, and it's not like a mandatory sentence, I suppose. It's a civil thing.
But it's a precedent setter, right? I mean, if that plays out the way you're talking about it, then that could be used to address Confederate monuments or any kind of monument elsewhere in the state.
Yeah, it's a dangerous precedent because then you all you need is a group of protesters with some tools, and then you force the local officials into that situation, and they try to get out of it the same way.
$25,000. All right, so there's that part of it. What about speaking of the governor earlier on this National Guard or to not National Guard? That is the question, right, for Governor Ivey. I know earlier in the week she basically said, okay, well, the Adjutant General of the Alabama National Guard can call up troops. I know personally a buddy of mine was called up and then sent home on the same day in National Guard. What do you think? What does that mean? Is it because she can't force a municipality, right? She's going to just tell them that they can, if they need it, use National Guard troops to help me with this.
No, I think the governor has the full authority. If the governor wants to call in, I mean, it's the president who can't do it. The governor can call in the National Guard.
Can the governor override a mayor or a city council or a county commission, or do they have to ask the governor, say, hey, governor, can we have assistance from the National Guard?
They could ask for it. They could request it. The governor still has the ultimate authority to come in. I mean, you don't have a situation where if there's unrest in Demopolis and the mayor says, no, we don't want any National Guard here. No, the governor can
sees
fit, right? You know what I'm saying? But there's a lot of weird politics here, and I guess there's this fear of seeing it as being too heavy-handed when people are supposed to be upset with law enforcement. And that's kind of the mood right now. The thing that I want to know, whatever happened to COVID-19?
Right. Well, we have a couple things out today that talk about had the extra danger of shouting at a protest and droplets carrying further for COVID-19. We did have that story, but If you use that, and I get it, I've thought about the same thing, but if you use that argument and say, all right, then people can't go to the protests because of social distancing, but we've opened up the state for other things. You see what I'm saying? Now that the state's opened back up for people to go, and as long as they say social distance, I mean, are you going to send somebody out to a protest with a, you know, and ride around and say, well, y'all got to be 6 feet apart?
Well, didn't they do that? Didn't they send reporters out to Orange Beach, Gulf Shores, last week?
Sure.
Did that, and started looking for drunks on the beach to ask them why they weren't wearing a mask.
Yeah, good point. Where's the news crew now?
Well, yeah, I mean, the media can do what the media does. I think we know what's going on there. But It does seem to me we were all told that we were going to die, and we were lectured to and you know, sneered at for wanting to open back up. Seems like it's an afterthought. And look, policy-wise, Sean, $3 trillion out the door, and I don't know that we're really, you know, as a society or at least a public, are making the most of that investment that the federal government put up if we're going to just kind of shrug this all off. Now that we're in this protest phase.
Jeff, I'm wondering if, you know, coronavirus and then these protests now, do you think that, I mean, 40 million people out of work since this began, do you think that having people holed up in their homes for so long is playing any part in this with the anger? I have a feeling, I still think there would be protests, even if, you know, this whole coronavirus thing never happened, but by keeping people locked in their homes for months and months and months, and then you take into account the people that have lost their jobs, I feel like there might be some extra anger because of that.
I agree, but you know, people idle time leads to these sort of situations. It's pretty clear you don't have a job to go to, you don't have anything to do, you go out and protest. Maybe that has something to do with it, but people being trapped inside. You know, who are they blaming? I guess they're blaming law enforcement. I mean, you try to walk a mile in these folks' shoes and figure out what leads them to this point, at this moment in time, and you can't separate the two. You have to imagine that there is some kind of link between being cooped up and being told that you can't go out and you have to social distance. The heavy hand of government, it does seem very police state-ish. So what is the logical next step? Well, we're going to go protest the police.
Now, coming right back, more with Jeff Poore right here at Bobio Mornings. Phone number, text line 343-0106. Right, 822 FM Talk 106.5, Bobio Mornings. Sean and Dalton coming up, Dr. Bill Williams. And he's talking about Cristobal. Being a kind of a Sunday into Monday landfall, but a rainmaker for the weekend ahead. And then we got this upper level low that's going to cause us to be doing what we're doing right now, riding out some thunderstorms for the next couple days. All right, to continue our conversation with our friend Jeff Poore, read his work in Lanyap, Breitbart, Yellowhammer News, also host of the Jeff Poore Show on WVNN. And Jeff, kind of wrapping up here on a state side of it, saw some discussion of grant money being applied in the state. Even though all this other stuff's going on, are we still working through Governor Ivey and the executive branch doling out the $1.78 billion, whatever it is? Is that still going on?
Yeah, that $1.8 billion. I would assume it's still going on. This is a good time to start doling it out while no one's really, this isn't really on many people's radar. But, you know, you do have a media in Alabama that is left of center. And this is kind of, I would say this protest stuff's their hobby horse, guys. So they're not really keeping an eye on what's going on at the top in the state of Alabama.
Yeah, the protest. I do get, and we continue to talk about the protest as a bigger story here because, well, I'll tell you what, I said it this morning. When Lubbock, Texas, when they had a protest in Lubbock, Texas, I don't know if you've been to Lubbock before, but when they had protests there that were significant, I said, you know what, this is a nationwide thing. And it is, I know it's cliche to say, but I think it's sad that you have protesters, legitimate protesters, being overshadowed by a bunch of criminals in so many cities around the country, you know, rioting and looting. So it's getting watered down. But yeah, I think it has resonated, you know, outside of major cities, outside the South.
I think, you know, that's, I suppose that's to be expected, that it has resonated outside of that. But there's something else going on here that I think is leading us to this. I don't think it's just this one isolated incident in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Agreed.
I think it all kind of built up. My question, and I don't know, you do a talk show every day. The law and order crowd is going to have a reaction to this. What's that going to look like? Is it going to really manifest itself as being something, you know, you always have to talk about the politics of it.
Uh-huh.
But what does this lead to? And I every time something like this happens, I make this point. I'm kind of tired of making it. The 68 unrest. And then we had all the cultural stuff with Woodstock and all that, and it is like a big time for the left of center in America. Well, at the same time, you look at presidential elections. Nixon wins 2 terms, if not for Watergate. Republicans would have won 6 of 6 elections going for a run there up until Bill Clinton in the 90s. So at this moment in time, with all of this unrest and what's going on, I mean, what does this mean to elections? And will there be the kind of opposite reaction, a pushback to it?
Jeff, China, they had one of their, you know, top diplomats there in China or some spokesperson who said that America needed to fix its racial problems. And obviously we know what all happens in China. I mean, they have concentration camps for Muslims there. But I'm wondering, bigger picture, and you just mentioned the election, do you think that what kind of opening have we as Americans given the Chinese and the Russians and whatever other foreign actors that might want to add fuel to the fire? And do you think they're doing that right now?
I think that's a lot of that is just, it's very convenient for the MSNBCs out in the world to blame Russia for the looting and all that. I think they're going to use whatever for their own propaganda, for their own domestic politics. You know, it wouldn't have mattered if we had this going on right now or if everything was just hunky-dory and the economy was sailing along. I wouldn't read into that too much. But I do find it amusing that we're hearing that there's these outside influences doing this. So the Antifa stuff, fine if you want to tie it to that, but I don't think there's a Russian bot farmers making people on Facebook saying, hey, it's okay to go out and loot. That just doesn't fly with me.
Okay, let's talk about some the politics of all this, as you mentioned earlier. First of all, where's the RNC convention? Where's that going to happen now?
Here in Nashville, that seems to be the place that is really pulling for it right now. I've got Republican governor with Bill Lee. It's not exactly a swing state. They like to have these conventions in states that they think they can win, but it sounds to me like if they needed to, they needed to move real fast, that Nashville would be the most equipped to handle it.
Okay, and that's going to be, I mean, that's... It's a pretty fast turnaround, you know. I mean, to get this, a lot of people with big, and then you got all the security issues on top of that.
Get that, but you have the arena there. You have Bridgestone Arena. You have pretty decent hotel capacity. You have the infrastructure that you got a venue and it's a destination place. That's that's where my wife's family's from. So I could see it. Does that mean it will happen there? I don't know, but that's when you hear from people and they talk about it, that to me sounds like that's the place where they're going to try to at least just try the hardest to land it.
All right, so there's Nashville on that, and then I guess we've been talking for a while and saying, okay, this bad economy, who does this prefer? We have talked in the past, the good economy preferred President Trump. I actually made an argument that with the bad economy going on, it still preferred Trump over Biden. What does bad economy, pandemic, and civil unrest favor in the political, in the presidential stakes?
Bad economy, obviously, not good for Trump. People are going to frame it otherwise. I don't think that's the case. The pandemic, I think the one's going to really put that on Trump, and then the economy probably tied to that. The civil unrest is interesting. Like I said, I think there's going to be a pushback to this. I think it's going to favor Republicans because people don't like seeing looting. And, you know, you're hearing everybody say, well, the protesters and the rioters and the looters are not the same. They're different groups. But no one's making that calculation. No one's sitting at home that's not really tied to politics is saying, hey, look, I understand there's protesters and looters and rioters and there's all these categories. And I stand with the protesters. No, the average person is going to see it all as one of the same. And you have to think they're going to tie it to the political movements of the left.
So it does benefit President Trump.
I think for those that aren't watching, yes. I think you're going to get big turnout now, maybe in New York City or L.A. or whatever. But guess what? Those places are going to go Democrat anyway.
That's right.
It's really the swing states you need to look at. And what does this do to impact a moderate, the few moderates left out there and a few undecideds left out there in these swing states? And I cannot think that this is a good thing at all.
There he is, Jeff Poore. If people want to reach out to you on Twitter, what's your handle?
It's twitter.com/Jeff_Poore.
All right, man. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me on, Sean.
Always a pleasure. Coming right back. Grab your phone calls at 343-0106. 343-0106.
FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile Mornings. Let's head over to McConnell Automotive and talk with Louis Arata. Hey, Louis.
Good morning, Dalton. How are you?
Hey, doing fantastic. And still the beginning of June. I know GM has a great deal out there for someone looking for a new vehicle.
I mean, it's just amazing. They got 0% for 72 months.
Wow.
I mean, you know, with the inventory levels the way they are, you know, I hate being the car guy in me and says, y'all need to get over here and buy them, but it's true. I mean, we got a couple of new trucks built over the past couple of weeks, so we're going to have some trucks here shortly. But right now, we got a few. Come look and check those out. I bought a AT4. That's the hottest thing going right now. And bought one down in Orlando. I should have it in a couple of days. It's got 9,000 miles, 19 model. We're going to certify it. So, okay.
And Louis also, I think we lost Louis there, but McConnellAutomotive.com, a great place to check out their new and their used inventory. And by the way, when you look outside a day like today where the rain's coming down, there's some extra dents and dings with vehicles. And the body shop there at McConnell Automotive, an excellent place to get some work done. That's McConnell Automotive. You'll find Mitch McConnell there. You'll find Louis Arata there on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65. And don't forget online, McConnellAutomotive.com.
All right, 8:38, and those that were just knocked off, you can hop back on at 343-0106. Sorry about that, 343-0106. It was not on your end, it was on our end, and you can hop back on 343-0106. All right, getting a bunch of texts coming in here, too. This one from Cody here says, do you think the average voter sees the civil unrest and sees the main issue as looting or police brutality, civil rights inequality? It could be interesting. And Cody and you, Jeff was breaking it down kind of between areas that are swing states, right? I mean, you can say there's states that are already not vote for President Trump, mm-hmm. or states that are probably sure thing for President Trump. So let's take those out.
You're not going to swing Oregon and you're not going to swing Alabama one way or the other because of what's going on.
Let's look at some of those the big wins for President Trump, Rust Belt states that he carried, you know, and Pennsylvania's or Indiana's, places like that. I don't know how everybody sees it, but Jeff seems to contend that this will favor President Trump. And you've seen this in the past, too. I don't know if in every case, but I think in recent memory, if it's wartime or there's unrest, it's benefited Republicans in voting for. Once again, we're not talking about, there's going to be people who say, well, I always vote this way or something. We're not talking about you. We're talking about people that vote differently, that are swing voters out there, and what does that mean for those? So will this, if the civil unrest is carried through, if this is going on through the summer, what if it's carried on into the fall, does that take a swing voter that was undecided and make them vote more for Trump or Biden? Does it affect them? Because I mean, I've been focused for such a long time on the economy portion of this, kind of where my brain goes, but now this is a whole nother issue.
Yeah, and I wonder how much of this will depend on, in those swing states that you're talking about, the direction from the leadership locally, whether a place has a Democrat mayor or a Democrat governor, and how they are reacting to some of these protests that might turn violent. Would that be enough to swing a voter to vote Republican if they see the president and Barr and some of the more notable Republicans coming out and saying, you know, the looting has to stop right now?
Yeah, eventually it will stop because there's not going to be anything left to loot.
Yeah, good point. Good point.
Eventually, but they'll quit putting stuff in the stores.
I mean, you know how they do polls going into elections, and they'll ask, what's your number one item? What's your number one concern going into this election? There are so many different things that mm-hmm. voters will be looking at going into this election that means more to them than something else. You have these, you have the protests for inequality that are going on right now. That'll be at the top of a lot of people's lists. You have the economy will be the top of a lot of people's list, and it just depends on how good of a job they feel that the president is doing, but also looking at Biden as he campaigns, and you know he won what another 8 states yesterday. That mm-hmm. that thing's over. He's going to be the Democrat nominee.
Yeah.
But do they feel that Biden will do a better job than Trump in these same situations? Will Biden right. be able to get the economy back faster? Will Biden be able to bring more peace to?
Well, if there was a Democrat president, a lot of this would go away.
That's what they say.
I would think I want to ask this: the finish line here. The finish line, and I've asked this question, I think I've heard it asked last night on TV too, but this is not rhetorical, this is serious, because I think this is important. You have the protests going on and calling for reform with law enforcement as it deals with black folks, you know, versus whatever police officer. I mean, they often point out white cops, but there's black folks that are killed by black cops too, mm-hmm. and every combination they're in. So where is the finish? What do the reforms need to be? Do you want federal reforms? Do you want individual department? You could say everything, but when do you arrive at a finish line? If you have any plan of action, a business plan, or a political plan, you know that, okay, here's what we're trying to get to. Here's the finish line. Now let's work towards that finish line. Is there a commonality of understanding in what that finish line is for people who are protesting across the country, or people who are engaged in the issue who might not be out protesting, but where is it? Is it a better situation in your local police department? Is it a federal deal? Where's the finish line?
Yeah, and Quinn Hillier, when he was on yesterday morning, he broke out some of the stats, and he was saying that unarmed killings by policemen and for black Americans, white Americans, that they've been dropping according to the stats that he rolled out. So he said that reform has been working. And, you know, I haven't looked at those exact stats. I'm going to take Quinn with the stats that he rolled out with.
I heard somebody else say them, but I have not looked them up either.
But how much does it matter, the reforms that appear to be working, when you have a video like we saw last week mm-hmm. where, and I think, you know, most people are on board in saying that that was excessive force and abhorrent yeah. behavior by that officer.
Yeah, there doesn't seem to be a debate. This is not one of those things where there was, you know, somebody says this, somebody says that. I don't think there's a lot of debate over the what happened there with George Floyd.
Right.
I mean, seems everybody I talk to.
But if there's been reforms made and the stats are looking better than they have before, you're right. What's the finish line? If things are looking better, that one video was awful.
Yes.
And the Ahmaud Arbery
video
was awful too.
Does that mean everything is?
Yes. Ahmaud Arbery wasn't killed by police.
Right.
He was killed by a vigilante.
But it gets lumped in, right?
It gets lumped in. I've seen his name on signs right alongside the people that have been killed by police.
So now we have, and that guy was a former officer, but we could say we have a police, not even a department down there, an area of South Carolina, and the police department in Minneapolis. Is what has happened there, does that reflect on all the other police departments? Why are they all judged at the same level? And then if you say you want reforms, I think a lot of people would say, okay, if you said it is unacceptable at murder or manslaughter, depends who, they're going after murder. It's unacceptable, and it's murder, what happened in Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you agree with that, does that mean you need to, I mean, there are people saying all cops are bad, and specifically you say what happened in Minneapolis is bad, but why does that mean other, so what change, you can say, I want to change that nobody would do that ever again in law enforcement. Yeah, well, that's not on the policy for anywhere. I don't think it even was in the policy for Minneapolis. So
right.
what change needs to happen? And once again, this is not rhetorical. It's a real question. I'd like to know what that is. All right, go to the phones here at 343-0106. Larry is in Mobile. First up, hey Larry.
Hey John, I don't see any protests or anything with that police officer that was killed last night or yesterday.
Yeah, the officer in up in Moody, Alabama, killed at the motel.
Yeah, that's
what
our sixth or seventh officer has been killed in our state so far this year.
Yeah, it's been a deadly year for law enforcement, absolutely.
And my thing is that they act like this just started with Trump. This is where was this at when Obama was in office? Because we had the same stuff going on. This is not something that just started because we got a white president. This is something that's been going on years, and it does need to stop.
Are we getting better? You know, that's my question. Like, I think what Dalton was saying, are we, I don't know. I mean, I can't speak for every department, but is this better? Is the policing better? And then where do we want to go? Does this need to come from federal on high, or is it just individual police departments?
Well, let me ask you one other thing. Years ago, cop pulled you over, and he's going to arrest you or stop you. Unless you were a really bad criminal, that's what he did. He arrested you. Now they fight you, they spit your face, they kick you, they do whatever they want to do, and then they expect for you not to do anything whenever you're doing this. If you're resisting arrest, you're resisting arrest.
Right.
I mean, there's a reason why they had three cops, and they were wrong. The one on his neck was definitely wrong. But when you got one holding each leg and one holding him down from the neck part, obviously there was something else going on for them to do that.
Yeah, they had him handcuffed at that point then, too. That was the thing that, I mean, once a man is handcuffed, there's no reason to have a hold like that on a neck.
My thing is they fight, they do everything that they can do to get away. They run, they, you know.
Oh, the show Cops wouldn't be in business if people didn't resist, right?
Yeah.
So, the question is, though, when people are protesting, you're protesting the death of George Floyd and maybe others, but what is the, my question, open question, real, what, okay, when, where is the finish line? What changes need to be made at what level and what timeline for it to be, accomplish that finish line? And I think that's a question that should be part of the national discussion. If we're going to have these protests and say, yes, part of it is outpouring of hurt, you know, what happened in the past, but you should be calling for change in this. And if you are, then what is the specific definition of that change? Larry, appreciate the call. We'll come right back to the phones next at 343-0106. Let's get to the phones here on Mobile Mornings. It's 8:52. Terry in Mobile up first. Hey, Terry.
Hi, Sean. My name is Terry, and I live here in Mobile. I graduated from college here in Mobile, and my husband and I both own businesses here in Mobile. I'm the mother of four black children. So you asked a question about what is the timeline and what is the reason. So first point I wanted to make is that clearly, if you watch any social media platform, ABC, CBS, NBC, PBS, you know that there is a difference between those of us that own our homes, we own our businesses, we raise our children well as African Americans. The vast majority of people that are protesting, they are protesting because of things that we've known what has been going on for generations in the United States of America. There's a difference between a rioter and a person that is protesting.
Agreed.
That's number one.
Agreed.
That's number one. And here's the other thing. You clearly see the difference in those imposters that are tearing businesses down. Why would a person take 20 years and build a business and go and burn that down? That's number one. Number two, in terms of a timeline, there is you know that we have leadership right now in this country and sometimes in the city of Mobile where it's divisive. Donald Trump, there is not one thing that man has done to unify Asian Americans, Latino Americans, us as African Americans. I graduated from college here 25 years ago at South Alabama, and we at that time we were encouraging a lot of the leaders to join together, those business owners and all of us. You know, you have to also look at how things start from the top. And then the last point is this: when it comes to systematic change, every time you see a black girl, a black man, a black woman that is on the news, every time you see them shot in the back with their hands up, getting out of their car, sometimes being stopped for no reason at all, it is, this is justified because of this. All of the reasons and the excuses for why this happens. I mean, I don't believe that any of us believe that you should be tearing a person's business down, but I understand the frustration as a business owner, as a mom raising black boys. Every time they walk out the door, I'm saying, I don't care if you're wrong or if you're right. In order to get home alive, you just go along with whatever their program is. I don't have an uncle, my dad, my brothers, not one black man in my family that has ever been stopped by a cop, black or white, here in Mobile, and been harassed, and they do whatever they need to do just to get home safe. So there are more than the perspective that you often portray, that all black people are crazy and that, you know, understand the system.
Terry,
voting locally, voting in all elections is what's going to stop this.
Hey, Terry.
Is what's going to stop this.
All right. And Terry, first of all, I appreciate your call. Let me set something straight. Maybe if you might be putting me in with somebody else, you hadn't been listening long. I don't think I portray that at all.
I've been driving to the office and I'm listening to everything you say, and often I click onto this station to hear some of this stuff, and some of the people that call, you know, it has...
But I'm not the people that call. Let's talk about me, Terry. You and I are talking. So first of all, I appreciate what you're saying about some same thing that I talked to about with my children. But like I said to Chief Batiste yesterday when he and I were talking, so if you heard the midday show or you go back and hear the podcast, I said, you know, what about driving while black? Because I said three of my friends have said to me specifically... And I remember going around and going, nah, man, it was something else. And they said, no, all three of them said, we have been pulled over for nothing, driving while black. I've had that conversation with my friends for a decade. And so I brought that up with the chief. He says, you know, we do keep records on who pulls whom over and the demographics on that. And he said, we look at that stuff. We study that stuff. So I addressed that question. I don't think that the past, and I'm also asking the question, where's the end? Because I'm not doing that, and I appreciate you calling about it, not as like a put down, but an understanding. Because is the Mobile Police Department, is it judged this, you know, because Minneapolis has that, you know, officer, former officer who killed George Floyd, does that mean that the officers here in Mobile are guilty of that? And that's
absolutely
one of my questions.
Absolutely not, Sean. And guess what? Mayor Sandy Simpson and Chief Batiste, I think they've done an excellent job in terms of trying to implement what Obama did and Sam Jones did, the community policing. Actually, when my boys and my husband and I, my husband has owned a business near downtown Mobile over 20 years. And look, when we are out, we make certain that they know all of the men in my family that have been in the military for 20, 30 years, retired in the military, police officers, we make sure that they know that, listen, if someone breaks into my home in my subdivision, I call the police. If someone does something to, we've had our business broken into. What I'm saying is that there are callers that live in this county, 500,000 people. We're black, we're white, almost 50-50. Mm-hmm. But when you implement community policing where these police officers, and here's the other thing, you have some police officers here in Mobile County, and you know it, and I know it, when there are things that are done that where they use excessive force, chokeholds and things like that, every person that has been on television and on the radio that you see when they talk about chokeholds and things like that, having people hogtied, those things are inhumane. There should be national standards against doing that. If it were your son or your daughter, when I gave birth to my children, the very first thing that we think about every day when our kids go out, Sean, is, will they encounter a police officer here in Mobile that where they just don't see my child as a human being? You know, we want our children to graduate from college. We want them to own businesses. We want them to own homes. We don't want them to go to jail. But a lot of times, there's a documentary. It's called 13th. If every person watches that documentary to see about how community policing, the mayors and the leaders in the city,